Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum,
Matt Levine,
and we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Kaiju creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between. All strange beasts welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com. Hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. Hey, as Camp Kaiju says, stay campy, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Just wanted to say thanks for sticking with us this month of October. We're going through some cult classics, some so bad they're good films, and we do still have the Toxic Avenger from 1984 coming up, but we're going to do that next week. Full disclosure, I'm opening a play this weekend, a play that I wrote at the Twin Cities Horror Festival. Matt Levine has some things going on himself, so we thought, why not push Toxic Avenger back and give you one from the vault this week. So for longtime listeners, this may be familiar, but for everyone else, please enjoy our review of the 1930s pre-code horror film White Zombie, starring Bela Lugosi. The movie has a lot of good, a lot of bad, definitely some campy. So check it out, and we'll see you next week for the Toxic Avenger. All right. Happy spooky season. Be well. Stay campy.
White Zombie, White Zombie, White Zombie, White Zombie is the opposite of I Walked with a Zombie in tone and aesthetic, where I Walked with a Zombie is like the Mona Lisa. It's like art, I would say. High art. You'd see it in a museum. White Zombie is graffiti, but like bad graffiti. But you still appreciate it. And you're still like, wow, somebody made that art. And it's rough and raw. And I don't know, man. I really liked it.
I did not like it so much. There are things that I like about it. Like the scene, which is definitely like a relic of pre-code Hollywood, where they could get away with a lot more sex and violence and all that. Excuse me. But the scene where they're in like the sugar mill, I think, and like there are all these zombies that are in there working, and a guy like falls into the mill and he's like crushed, and like all these workers just like keep on like mindlessly going about their work. That's such a gruesome, like dark, violent scene. Pretty amazing for a 1932 movie.
Yeah, honestly, one of the darker things I've seen in classic Hollywood. I was like, what the hell was
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, man. So, you know, like, and also, like, I mentioned sex and violence. Like, there's the gratuitous shot of, like, the heroine. I can't remember her name. Maybe it doesn't matter. But she's, like, getting ready for her wedding, and they, like, they show her, like, in her negligee, basically, you know? And it's like, wow, this is a pre-code movie. And this shot right here is an example of that, you know?
Totally. I mean, it is flawed 100% in terms of, you know, like just what we were talking about with I Walked with a Zombie, the white supremacy over these Haitian black natives and this exoticism and the fear of the unknown, like that's there too. I mean, that's like the overriding flaw. Because it doesn't, unlike I Walked with a Zombie, it's not interested in subverting those expectations or pointedly criticizing the history of slavery. It's just full pulp leaning into all the filth without remorse.
Yeah, no, totally. Like, there's not a single character of color that has dialogue that like expresses their experience. We never really get a sense of like the history of racism and colonialism and slavery on this island. So yeah, there's not even an attempt to like, you know, present that political theme.
Right. Meanwhile, you got Bela Lugosi doing, like, I was like, this is Count Dracula placed on a sugar mill plantation.
Yeah, pretty much. A lot of overacting, a lot of camp. Bela Lugosi in White Zombie does the most conspicuous poisoning of somebody else's glass of liquid that I've ever seen in a movie, and it's hilarious. I love it. Like, he, like, puts his whole hand over the glass and does this, like, funny motion where it's like, oh, clearly you're poisoning this guy. One of many very funny moments in the movie.
And speaking of Dracula, this was made right after Dracula at Universal. White Zombie was from an independent production company. And just to make an extra buck, Lugosi agreed to do this. I think he was only on set for a week, like very minimal compared to the general shooting schedule. And this studio, I forget the name of it right now, but of course they were cashing in on Lugosi's incredible star power at this moment. Not only his presence on screen is evocative of Dracula, but there are shots out and outright shots that are just straight up taken from Dracula. If you haven't seen in a while, you may remember there are moments in Dracula that are just Lugosi's eyes on the screen with a glow, and that's how he's spellbinding people. The exact same thing happens in White Zombie, to the point where I was like, is this a Universal picture? It's not. It's just this rival studio ripping off this other studio's hit. Amazing.
Yeah. And I did read that they, like, reused a lot of, like, other sets from other movies. I don't know if Dracula specifically was one of them, but I think they actually used some of the Frankenstein sets. So, like, that feeling of familiarity is understandable, you know?
Right. It's like a Universal picture without being a Universal picture.
Yeah, without the class or the good acting or the actual scares of a Universal horror movie.
It's so true, though. Good, I mean, I my note is literally Bela Lugosi doing his best. That's my good.
Yeah, that seems about right. I think some of, like, the background, like, matte effects, you know, of, like, the spooky castle in the background on, like, a distant shore with, like, you know, stormy weather. Like, some of that looks pretty cool. I would put that in the good category as well.
Yeah, and I think there's some atmospheric spookiness to the film as well, which was nice. It helps sustain the otherwise bonkers plot. But my good and campy kind of blend, because what I find good about this movie is how utterly campy it is. Maybe it didn't intend to be campy, but it's, for me, I had a ball watching it, just being like, what are these choices that are being made?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It is a lot of fun. It does seem unintentional, like, almost entirely, like, that sort of camp value, but as camp often is. But yeah, it's really entertaining. And I, you know, I won't ruin it here, but the way that, like, the army of zombies dies at the end is, like, so hilariously, like, abrupt and, like, nonchalant. It's it must be seen to be believed. It's great.
Nonchalant's the word, because, yeah, they just, oh, gonna die now.
One after the other. Yeah, it's great.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that part is very cool.
Yeah. Do you remember there's a moment, there's an eagle. There's an eagle that screams in White Zombie. And I cracked up every time because to me it sounded like a woman, just like a terror-stricken woman scream that they overdubbed with this eagle. And I was like,
yeah,
what?
My partner Kelly and I, like, broke out laughing at that every time too. It's the loudest shriek you have ever heard. Yeah.
Loudest ever, every time.
Yeah. There's a lot of that fun stuff in there for sure. Like, I love the, you know, I mentioned, like, the very conspicuous poisoning before. And, like, I just think it's so funny that, like, the way that they turn people into a zombie in this movie is, like, by, you know, through, like, a very obvious, like, powder or whatever, you know, that they like put in a glass of wine or like in their corsage. And I just think like, I don't know, the like the lack of creativity around that is kind of charming in a way, you know?
Right, right. Like it's for me personally, it's hard to like condemn this movie for its, you know, it's relishing in the tropes of Haitian zombies, the bad stuff that you're like, oh, right, slavery. Ugh. Because it's just such a dumb movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not forgiving it. But it's also almost not worth my time to just dump on it.
And yeah, I know what you mean. It's not even attempting to do anything like that. So like, you know, at least it doesn't try. Like you, if you understand what the movie is, then you have to be like, all right, you're doing an okay job at what you're trying to do, you know?
Right. It was just like a pulpy comic book that I flipped through, and then I was like, well, that was fun. I see its problems, but I'm just not going to read it again.
Yeah. I will say for the bad category for me, like the plot of like the guy who like meets the woman on the boat and like instantly falls in love with her. And then like try, like apparently like will sacrifice everything to like steal her for eternity. Like, you know, if you thought the love triangle and I Walked with a Zombie was unconvincing, and this movie, it's like non-existent. It's it makes zero sense at all. It's like the bland, like the two protagonists, Madeline, I think is the woman's name. I suddenly remembered it. I can't remember the guy's name. But like, you know, they're the blandest white heroes of all time. You don't care what happens to them.
Yeah, 100%. It's a short movie too. It's like an hour, barely more than an hour. Yeah, if you got an hour to kill, sure, put it on. There are worse movies. But if you want some like cinema, some nice filmmaking, like you appreciate story, production, direction, I Walked with a Zombie is where you want to be.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a movie, sorry, I didn't bring this up during our I Walked with a Zombie conversation, but there's a recent movie called Zombie Child. It's by a really good Italian director, Bertrand Bonello, I think is his name. And it's in a way kind of like playing with I Walked with a Zombie, and it's like cutting back and forth between like the early 20th century and then like modern day Paris, where there's a Haitian immigrant, a young girl who's going to a school there, a private school, and kind of like dabbling in like voodoo rituals. So yeah, I just wanted to include that at some point in the conversation. Sorry, I forgot to do it earlier. But Zombie Child, it plays with a lot of this stuff in really fascinating ways.
Okay. I am interested in seeing modern takes on the Haitian zombie, because I feel like that has gone away in favor of the Romero type zombie.
Yeah.
Maybe totally. For, you know, for better or for worse, I think you'd want to handle, you know, the Haitian voodoo traditions with a little bit more respect, maybe.
Yeah. But yeah. And I don't know if Zombie Child always does that. Like, it is actually still kind of offensive and questionable at times, but a really fascinating movie, and like it's kind of also commenting on like all these old movies, you know. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Cool. My zombie movie I want to mention is actually a sequel to White Zombie. It came out 4 years later. It is a very loose sequel. You know how studios did at the time; they were just like, "Let's get a sequel out," but it actually has nothing to do with the first film. It's called Revolt of the Zombies. This movie was unbearable for me to watch. Like, utterly boring. Like, not offensive. It was just boring. I gave it 1.5 stars out of 5 on Letterboxd. White Zombie, I gave 2.5 out of 5. But, man, 1.5 stars for Revolt of the Zombies. My good... This is actually pretty cool. The first 5 minutes depicts a battle in World War I with Cambodian zombie soldiers.
Wow.
It's really cool. It's like All Quiet on the Western Front meets zombies. And the Cambodians are actually portrayed by Asian actors.
Wow.
And I was like,
an anomaly.
Did I just find this rare gem of a film? Literally never went back to that idea of zombie soldiers. It just like devolved into some really boring, lame love story in Cambodia. without any zombies. Like, there was hardly a zombie outside of those first 5 minutes. And I went, what is happening?
That seems well-deserved, yeah. It's not very bad.
Do not recommend.
Maybe it's kind of like Killdozer, where, like, I loved the opening minute of Killdozer with, like, the cool, like, outer space effects. I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And then, like, for the next hour and 10 minutes, I was like, no, not awesome at all. This is terrible.
Killdozer has come up so many times through the run of this podcast. I feel like we should have a shirt that's, like, something Killdozer related.
I watched the movie Killdozer, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
Yes. There you go. I got to get that on the shop soon.
Yeah. Maybe that means I secretly love it if we talk about it so much. That could be.
I think you do. You don't have to admit it, but I think you do.
In a way. In its own way.
Killdozer or White Zombie?
Oh, wow. I would rather watch White Zombie.
I actually agree with that. That's okay.
It's amusing, at least. It's, you know, ridiculous, which is always good.
Right, right.
And thank you all for hanging out. If you liked what you heard, please tell a friend, leave a rating and review, and visit CampKaijuMovieReviews.com, Instagram, or even Patreon for more monster movie content. Links in our bio. We can't thank you enough. Camp Kaiju is recorded with your help in the Twin Cities with music by Terrence Jackson. Oh, and before I forget, Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of those proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com. Find the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. And again, as Camp Kaiju says, thank you, friends. And until next time, stay campy.
Friday, the 13th. You may only see it once, but that will be enough. Friday, the 13th.
And I have to say, I had a dry spell of monster movies outside of the podcast for quite a while. I just, like, didn't watch too many monster movies outside of what we talk about here. But over the last couple of weeks, I've seen a good handful of monster movies. So one or two of them might pop up on the website soon.
Nice, nice. Yeah, it's October. I've been trying to watch some, you know, as many horror movies as I can, as many monster movies as I can. Do you know what franchise I just started dipping my toe into?
The Exorcist?
No, it's from the 80s. There's about a million installments.
A Nightmare on Elm Street?
If only. No, Friday the 13th.
Oh, okay. A Nightmare on Elm Street is my favorite horror franchise, and Friday the 13th might be my least favorite, but I don't mean to sway your opinion. What do you think of them?
Sir? I agree with you. So I saw the first two, and I was like, oh my God, these are not good movies. And they're like, but yet... It's like, I'm not going to say they're so bad, they're good even, but they're so cheaply made that I can't help but watch.
Yeah.
So I feel myself being drawn into this ridiculous unfolding mythos around Jason Voorhees. I'm like, this is nothing about this is anything but contrived and cliche and stupid. Yeah. And yet here I am. I'm on the third one.
Okay. I saw the third one in a movie theater in 3D a while ago, so that was pretty cool. But, like, the only thing that was fun about that was the 3D. So, like, if I watched it in 2D, I'm sure I would not enjoy it very much. I do agree with you, though. They're kind of like an interesting time capsule. All those 80s slasher movies that were just made as, like, quickly and cheaply as possible are interesting to watch in that way, just to be like, oh, like... This was such a, it was like this style of movie making was so in vogue at that time, you know, it was
interesting.
But yeah, they don't hold up very well. They're pretty boring nowadays.
I think so. And not to make this a episode about that, but just comparing it to, say, John Carpenter's Halloween. Basically the same premise. And Halloween was made just as cheaply. But yet there's an artistry around the direction and the choices made with the editing and everything that makes it still a compelling watch. Meanwhile, Friday the 13th is just such a slow, drawn out affair. And it, the last 30 minutes or so with Mrs. Voorhees, it does pick up, but a whole movie it does not.
Excuse me. I like that sentence construction. Yeah. And you're totally right. You can tell that, like, you know, like when I don't know, I'm imagining like conversations between the director and the cinematographer, where the cinematographer is like, so what kind of angle do you want? Like, what kind of lighting? And the director's just like, I don't care. It's like, the actors in frame. Like, I don't mean to sound too harsh. That's probably not exactly how it went, but that is kind of like the finished product that you see in those movies.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll see where it goes. I can't wait for Jason to take Manhattan and go to space and fight Freddy Krueger at some point.
Yeah, I have to admit I haven't seen those later Friday the 13th movies. I probably should. Because those are probably the fun ones. They're really
ridiculous. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. All right. Okay. Where were we?